Can't have. Luke kicked him on the shin. This is an orphanage for orphans, and that's what you are.
I'm not an orphan. My father's here.
Tell me another, Porky, Luke goaded. Peter suddenly thumped him, and Lana rushed towards the pair as they fell to the ground, rolling on top of one another over and over. She managed to grab Luke under his arms and pull him off Peter, who was crying.
The orphan pulled my ear, Luke whined.
Don't call him that, Lana admonished. He has a name, Peter. I'm ashamed of you both. You've been very naughty boys. You're supposed to be playing nicely together. Get up, Peter, this minute.
He started it, Peter said,
tears furrowing a path down his cheeks. He bent to rescue his cap. A shadow fell over her. She turned and looked up into the angry blue eyes of Carl Best. I do not know who you are, he said, his voice dripping ice. Perhaps one of the teachers, but I would prefer that you do not speak to my son in such a tone. He is not to blame.
I'm Lana Ashwin, headmistress of the village school, Lana said coolly, her heart pumping so loudly he must hear it. Papa, Peter said, flinging his arms round his father. His father bent and hugged him briefly.
Run and play, Peter. I would like to speak to this lady.
I don't want to play with them, Peter said sulkily. I hate all of them. I'm going to find Freddy and take him for a walk.
He looked beseechingly up at his father.
Can I?
Carl Best hesitated. All right, but only 10 minutes. Don't go along the drive. Keep in the gardens, as I will have to leave soon, and I want to be sure to say goodbye. He turned his attention back to Lana, who desperately tried to put on a calm exterior, although she was fuming inside. If you are from the school, Carl Best said, why do you interfere with my child? It should be for the teachers who work here to see he obeys, not for you to do. How dare he be so rude? She'd only tried to break up the fight before the boys got seriously hurt.
Mr.
She broke off. She wasn't supposed to know his surname, let alone his Christian name. Embarrassment flooded her cheeks at her near slip-up. Herr Best, he cut in.
Mr. Best, she said, deliberately using the English form, and thankful she was tall so she didn't have to tilt her neck too far. I was invited to bring some of our children at the school to the fair. It's my responsibility to keep an eye on them, and if they misbehave, to intervene. Most children who get into fights, no matter who starts, are equally to blame.
Not Peter, Carl Best said firmly. I have taught him he must walk away when someone tries to make him angry. He must not fight.
Well, he didn't this time, Lana flared, but I can't say I blame him. When anyone is being horrible, it makes you want to hit them back. Peter was only being a normal boy. He has to learn to stick up for himself in situations like that.
You are encouraging my boy to be a bully.
Of course I'm not, Lana flashed. He was just giving as good as he was getting. I just didn't want either of them to get hurt, that's all, and that's why I reprimanded both of them. Whatever school I teach at makes no difference.
Carl Best studied her for a long minute. Then he shrugged. I apologise, madam. He gave an almost imperceptible bow, and she couldn't tell whether he was being sarcastic or whether it was simply his Germanness coming out. She watched him walk away, his shoulders square, his head high, not looking at all subdued as a German prisoner of war ought to look. The rest of the afternoon passed peacefully enough, but Lana wasn't able to concentrate. She barely listened to Dolores when she began telling her about her boyfriend who'd been sent somewhere in Scotland. Her mind was in turmoil. Why did Carl Best appear to have such freedom? She still hadn't spotted anyone this time who looked like a policeman, keeping an eye on him. But she supposed they must be about and wouldn't be letting him out of their sight in a hurry. What was it about the man that was so special to the British? But whatever the reason, he was a German, and she must never forget it. She didn't see Herr Best, as she decided to call him from now on, to remind herself exactly who he was for the rest of the afternoon. She didn't know whether to be relieved or disappointed. He was such an enigma. She wanted to get to the heart of him
Not for any personal reason, she quickly assured herself, but out of sheer curiosity. And wanting the best for Peter, of course. Lana was disappointed Maxine was not anywhere in sight. She'd hoped they might continue their conversation from before the young nurse had called the matron away. She spent most of the rest of the afternoon making sure the six boys were occupied, though they were only playing with each other, except Luke. This time it was Athena who broke up another skirmish between him and one of her Bingham Hall boys. Lana was embarrassed to conclude that Luke was deliberately picking fights. Maybe mixing the two sets of children was a bad idea after all. But then, how would the orphans make their way in the outside world if they were always kept separate? And how would the more privileged children learn to be kind to those not so well off? Maxine must be aware of the problem as well, which is why the matron so badly wanted today to be a success. By the time Lana had rounded up her six boys and they were walking back to the school, where they would either ride their bikes or walk home, she was exhausted. She couldn't work it out. She was used to handling many children at once, awkward ones as well as the obedient ones, so why had the afternoon proved so dispiriting and draining? It wasn't anything to do with bumping into Carl Best, was it? To notice how handsome he was, and how different, close up, to her idea of a German Nazi. Even though he'd looked and sounded so angry, she knew he was only defending his beloved son. Lana swallowed hard. He was someone she'd had no experience of. She must put him out of her mind. "How did it all go?" Janice asked as soon as Lana entered the sitting room, now in the same dreadful state as it was when she'd first seen the cottage. She tried to ignore the spurt of anger. What was the point of her trying to keep everything clean and tidy when Janice patently couldn't care less? So-so. Blast, she'd meant to say it all went swimmingly. What's that supposed to mean? Janice gave her a long look. Oh, I bet they didn't all get on like nice little kiddies, did they? Without waiting for an answer, she carried on. Well, don't say I didn't warn you. I bet those orphans were an unruly lot when they're let loose. It was Luke who was unruly. Lana rushed to defend the Bingham Hall children, picking fights with kids smaller and younger than himself, and encouraging Leonard to do the same. They were little humbugs. I felt so embarrassed. Thank goodness I only had the six to contend with. Don't know what I'd have done if more parents had given permission for their precious offspring to mix with the lowly orphans. So they were right not to let their kids mix after all, then, Janice said with a smirk. It seems so. Lana thought that was the end of the conversation about the fair, but she was wrong. Janice's next words made her jump. Anyone interested in there? Janice asked. Lana hesitated a second too long. No, I can't think of anyone. She was determined not to discuss her encounter with Carl Best to anyone, least of all Janice. Took your time to answer. The smirk was even wider. Lana gritted her teeth. I don't know anyone except Maxine and two of the teachers, she said. Sounds like a dull afternoon to me. Not completely, Lana said. I had to break up a fight with Luke and one of Bingham Hall's children. Luke set about him. The little boy is smaller but wiry, and he gave Luke a good thump. I told them both off. Go on. Janice inspected one of her nails, as though she didn't have a care in the world whether Lana continued or not. The boy's father came along and told me off, Lana said, keeping her voice light. I thought they were orphans. Oh, no, not Peter, Lana said, then bit her tongue. She hadn't meant to say his name. It wouldn't be little Peter Best you're talking about, would it? Janice said, watching her closely. And he's very good-looking, and very German, Papa. Chapter 18. In class, standing in front of the children, teaching them her beloved Shakespeare by getting them to act the parts as a way of learning, stopped Lana from going over and over the image of Carl Best as he looked down at her from his height of well over 6 feet. His bright blue eyes had flashed with anger, and his mouth was tight, as though he'd been trying to hold himself in check. The annoying thing was that it really hadn't altered his looks at all.
He was simply one of the most handsome men she'd ever set eyes on, and certainly the first man she'd paid any real attention to since Dickie. What a shame he was German, she thought, now thoroughly cross with herself that she was even thinking along such lines. But he looked like a man who was used to getting his own way, dictating to others. She shuddered. Yet he obviously adored his son. She couldn't imagine his work beyond being in charge of hundreds of enemy troops, couldn't see him signing death certificates for thousands of Jews, condoning the camps, torturing prisoners. Or was that still an exaggerated picture? She'd heard various sides of the argument in the newspapers, but her brothers had insisted they were true, even though they were in the Navy and likely heard things third hand. Lana swallowed hard, trying to dislodge the lump of guilt in her throat as Dickie's image floated in front of her.
"Miss, can I play the Fairy Queen?"
Josephine broke into her sinister visions of murderous Nazis and Dickie walking away from her in disgust. Lana hesitated. Josephine certainly was no angel, but she'd vastly improved since Lana had had a serious word with her, particularly towards Priscilla. "All right, Josephine, I'll let you, but just for this lesson, we want others to have a chance to be the Fairy Queen too." Josephine grinned with delight.
"Thank you, miss." "She's no good at reading," Oliver called out. "She can't read any big words." "Yes, I can."
Josephine swiveled her head to the side to glare at him.
"That's enough."
Lana rapped on her desk with the blackboard rubber. "Let's start. You all know what part you're playing, so show me how well you can act." The children rose to the occasion, and even the ones who didn't have a part followed the story with their fingers or rulers. As usual, Priscilla hadn't volunteered. Lana hadn't forced her. She was still an intense, nervy child. Lana hated to admit it, but she was lonely. Wendy Booth was a lovely woman, but she didn't see much of her except for a tea break in the afternoon after the last class. She'd begun to get used to Janice's ways, but realised they would never be real friends. You just couldn't get close to her, no matter how hard you tried. Janice was too eaten up with bitterness. In a way, it hadn't been all bad to meet Janice, Lana thought, as she washed the dishes for the umpteenth time and wiped down the kitchen in the cottage. Janice had taught her one important thing, though the woman hadn't realised it, not to remain bitter, as it would ruin the rest of your life. Slowly, Lana was beginning to let go of Dickie in her mind. But where did that leave Carl Best? And why was she even asking that question? When Janice had dropped her bombshell that she knew about Peter's father being a German, Lana's mouth had fallen open, and without warning her face had blazed red. "How do you know about Peter and his father?" she'd managed to reply. Janice tapped her finger on her nose. "Where did you hear it?" Janice hunched her shoulders for a second. "One of the cleaners who does the home as well as here. She told Mrs. Danvers one of the children had a German father. What's important is whether it's the truth or not." "Yes, it is, if you must know," Lana said, this time not able to suppress her intense irritation with the woman. "Well, don't forget who he is," Janice said. "You want to steer clear of him."
"What on earth are you implying?" Lana said.
"Good-looking man, your grieving fiancé. I can see it all happening."
"What?
A romantic liaison with the German POW. It's out of the question."
So why did her heart pound at the very idea?
"He seems to have a lot of freedom," Janice said, watching Lana as she cleaned up around her.
"I'm sure there's a policeman lurking not far away." Lana banged a plate into the rack above. "Anyway," she looked at Janice, "I really don't want to talk about it."
"Then we'll talk about Priscilla," Janice said without pausing. "How much longer do we have to put up with her?"
"Janice, have you no compassion? She's a damaged child, and I'm trying to make things a little easier for her. Please show some patience and kindness, if it wouldn't be too much trouble," Lana added.
Janice shrugged. "Thanks for supper. I think I'll go to my room."
She stood up and went out of the door without another word.
Lana was preparing her next class when the telephone rang.
Is that Lana?
Yes, Maxine. You're just the person I need to speak to.
Makes two of us, Maxine chuckled.
Then her tone changed to a more serious note.
Lana, I was wondering, actually I have a favour to ask you. It's rather unusual, but I don't want to discuss it on the phone. Could we meet somewhere private?
Would you like to come here for a change? Lana asked, intrigued.
Maxine sounded as though she had something on her mind and wasn't sure how it would be taken.
We'll be completely private in my office.
If Maxine could get past Mrs. Danvers.
Good idea. Tomorrow afternoon, say 5 o'clock?
Yes, I'll be free then, Lana said.
She couldn't wait to find out what favour Maxine wanted from her.
Dead on time, Maxine arrived at Lana's office.
You managed to get past her then, Lana said with a welcoming smile.
Who, the woman behind the glass screen whose looks could kill you stone dead?
Lana laughed.
The very one. She does her best to make my life a misery. I've tried really hard with her, but it's impossible.
She liked the headmaster before me, and she lets it be known that she resents me.
They had someone awful like that with the matron before June, Maxine said.
Thankfully, I never met her, but June said she was a horror. Quite cruel with the way she treated the children, which was even worse.
Things changed for the better the minute June took over.
She caught Lana's eye.
Anyway, I haven't come to discuss ogres. I need a favour and you're the only person I'd trust.
I'll be glad to help, Lana said. What do you want me to do?
I've made a promise to one of our boys, but it means taking him on a train, rather a long way away, so it will take all day.
She regarded Lana.
I thought, as it's the summer holidays, the school will be closed and you might have the time.
Where do you want me to take him?
Bletchley?
I've never heard of it.
It's in Buckinghamshire.
Who would I be taking?
It's Peter, the little chap you've already met with the German father.
Lana's stomach lurched.
I don't see. It's just that his father is allowed to see his son occasionally, even though he's officially interned. But as you can imagine, it's difficult for him to come here. Much easier for Peter to be taken to him.
Yes, I suppose so.
Lana was stumbling for the right words. How could she tell Maxine that she could not, would not have anything to do with Carl Best and all he stood for?
I'm sorry, Maxine, she began, steeling herself against the look of surprise in the matron's beautiful eyes.
Anything. Ask me anything else and I'll do it gladly.
But not that.
I know the children here aren't your responsibility, but I'm at my wit's end. I'd take him myself, but I need to be here as Barbara's in the sick bay, so we're really short.
I'm sorry.
I understand.
It's a long journey, and you'd be looking after one child who isn't easy, though goodness knows none of them are really, but you understand more when you look at their backgrounds.
It's not the journey.
Then what is it?
It's because his father is a German. I can't stand them, and I can't bring myself to do anything to help them.
They're not all bad, Maxine said in a neutral kind of tone.
Maybe not all the civilians, even though most of them appear to go along with Hitler in his mad ambitions to rule the world for 1,000 years.
Perhaps it seems like it to us, here in England, Maxine replied. But if we were starving with no work, and a family to feed, we might not be so different. And don't forget, people are only told what the Nazis want them to hear.
The dreaded word. She gulped.
The Nazis killed my fiancé.
Her eyes stung with unshed tears, and Maxine's face began to blur.
Maxine jumped up and came to Lana's side of the desk. She laid a hand on her shoulder.
Oh, Lana, I'm so sorry. I had no idea. No wonder you're so upset. May I ask you what happened?
His ship was torpedoed, she said dully. She looked up at Maxine.
It wouldn't be quite so bad if Peter's father wasn't a Nazi.
She didn't want to say his name.
Maxine's eyes widened.
Who said he was a Nazi?
You did, when you were telling me about the photograph.
Maxine's expression suddenly relaxed and she smiled.
Oh, Lana, I remember now. I hadn't finished telling you when Kathleen came in saying she needed me urgently. No, no, Herr Best is not a Nazi.
But you saw him in his uniform.
Yes, and at the time I thought exactly the same. But when Crofton translated the letters to his wife, he said he wouldn't be at all surprised if he turned out not to be a Nazi, even though he wore the uniform in the photograph. When I studied Herr Best's face in the photograph, I have to say he didn't strike me as a cruel man at all. In fact, the very opposite. She gave Lana a steady look. Anyway, the letters were warm and loving, but there was a strange allusion to a poem, and we realised it was a coded message. We put two and two together and came up with the idea that he might well be a resistor and that he was trying to escape to England. The next letter implied he'd been successful, and you remember when you saw him arrive in the Rolls-Royce on May Day? He was accompanied by two gentlemen. Well, they were policemen, a detective inspector and a sergeant sent with Herr Best so he could see his son for the first time in 4 years. He was only allowed to give us very sketchy details of his escape and that he was working for British intelligence. She couldn't take in what Maxine was telling her. Carl Best wasn't a Nazi after all, and even if he wasn't, what difference did it make? He was still German, the enemy. But if he was really working for us...
I didn't know there was a German resistance, Lana said finally, shaking her head.
Maybe not a formal one, as we know with the Free French, Maxine said, but nevertheless he's working with us. Apparently, he has information the British are very keen to use. Of course, he couldn't hint what this might be, it's all top secret, but you can be sure he's on our side, well and truly.
Lana's brain whirled. A resistor? Not involved in Hitler's frightening regime. Yet even if he wasn't a true Nazi, he must have convinced them he was loyal to the cause, or he surely would have been kicked out. Probably worse.
So he'd have to convince them he was as cruel as they. As intent on invading countries, bombing cities to smithereens, and clearing out the Jews as the other Nazis in their despicable regime. She shuddered.
You're still not convinced, are you?
Maxine broke into her confusion of thoughts. If this is the case, then I understand. But look at it like this. Peter's gone through more than any child ever should, and it's affected him terribly. He's never really made friends because he feels different. You cannot imagine his joy at being reunited with his father again at the fair. Except it's not the end of the story for the little chap. He'll have to remain at Bingham Hall until the end of the war, but at least Herr Best is allowed to see him occasionally, and I want to do everything in my power to see that he does, as who knows how long this blasted war will go on for.
Lana was silent.
I don't want to do this. I don't want to see Carl Best, Nazi or no Nazi. I don't like him, and he made it very clear he doesn't like me. But how do I explain all that to Maxine, who will think I'm crazy?
Maxine broke the silence.
If you think about it, Herr Best put himself in a very dangerous situation pretending to be something he wasn't. There's no doubt if they'd found out he wasn't loyal, he'd have been shot. And there could have been ramifications for his wife and son. That's why he sent them to England for their safety. And even that must have aroused some suspicion. She caught Lana's eye. What do you say, Lana? Do you have the courage to overcome your loathing of anyone German, for little Peter's sake?
Chapter 19 Lana couldn't settle. She was thankful to have the cottage to herself after Priscilla had gone to bed. She didn't know where Janice was. The woman never bothered to leave her a note to say when she'd be back. She looked around the kitchen that was strewn again with Janice's rubbish. Lana had tried to make a point, only cleaning and tidying her own things, but it had made no impact on Janice whatsoever. Priscilla had her own view. She would rather clean the mess in the kitchen than do her homework, despite Lana's discouraging her. It was becoming a problem. The child was falling further behind and in no uncertain terms was blaming Janice.
We have to realise that not everyone is the same, Lana told Priscilla. Mrs. Parks is perfectly content to live like this. I doubt she even notices all the rubbish.
Priscilla looked sceptical.
She must notice.
Well, it's not for us to make a judgment, Lana said.
then stopped. Wasn't that exactly what she was doing with Carl Best? Judging him? Maxine had tried hard to put him in a different light and to point out not all Germans blindly followed their Führer. Some were even brave enough to work completely in opposition, even if it cost them their lives. Carl Best was apparently one of these people. Maxine had left Lana's office, obviously disappointed she hadn't said she would take Peter to see his father. Lana sighed heavily. Had she always been so lacking in backbone? She didn't think so. It was Dickie's senseless death that had made her despair so much. But she was still making him the excuse, even though a little boy's happiness depended on seeing his father. His mother and grandmother had died. His father was all he had in the world, and it seemed she was the only person at this particular time who could help him. The next morning, after Priscilla had gone to her class, Lana went straight into her office and picked up the telephone. "Bingham Hall, Maxine Taylor speaking." "Maxine, it's Lana. Look, I'm sorry about yesterday. I wasn't thinking straight." She took in a breath. "I'm flattered that you asked me if I could take Peter to see his father." "Of course I will." "Oh, Lana, I'm so pleased and grateful. I felt awful pursuing it after you told me about your fiancé, but there was no one else to ask here. So thank you. We'll sort out a date when you're free." "School closes at the end of the week, so I could take him Monday or Tuesday. Would that do?" "I'll make the arrangements and ring you back to confirm the day." Maxine sounded relieved. "Thank you again, Lana. You didn't have to, and I really appreciate it." "Well, I've met Peter and he's a nice little lad." Lana paused. "But I'd like to ask you something, Maxine."
"Go on."
"Would you have any objection if I took Priscilla as well?"
"I'm not sure," Maxine said, and Lana could imagine the matron turning over the idea. "It would do the child's good to be out for the day, but how do you think Peter would take it? He'd be sharing his father, which is a bit unfair."
"No, it wouldn't be like that," Lana replied. "If it was just the three of us, it'd be me who'd be in the way. Mr. Best and Peter need time to be together without me hovering around. But if I had Priscilla, it would make it less awkward for them."
She didn't say that it would be less awkward for her having Priscilla.
There was a few seconds' silence. Then Maxine said, "Actually, I think it's a very good idea." Lana breathed out. "I probably don't need to say this, Lana, but as you can appreciate, this is a delicate situation, and I wouldn't want anyone to know any details of where you're going or who you're meeting. As far as the staff here are concerned, you're taking Peter and Priscilla to spend the day with your family. Would you mind telling that small fib?"
"No, I think you're right," Lana said. "I won't let it go any further my end. And I'll warn Peter and Priscilla as well. They're both old enough to keep a secret."
"Then it's settled. You'll need to come over and I'll give you money and directions, etc. Shall we say tomorrow? Come for coffee and one of Bertie's famous rock cakes."
"I'll be there."
The receiver crackled and she couldn't hear Maxine's next remark.
"Sorry, Maxine, I didn't catch that."
"I said, are you sure you're all right about doing this? I don't want to push you into something you feel uncomfortable about."
"I'm perfectly happy about it," Lana assured her. To her surprise, she realised she meant it.
For the first time since she'd known Priscilla, the child's face lit up at the prospect of an outing and a long train ride.
"Priscilla, it's really important you don't tell anyone where we're going or who we're meeting. I should be in a lot of trouble if anyone finds out, and so would Peter's father. So you must promise to keep this a secret. We're on a secret mission."
"Like spies?" Priscilla said, screwing up her eyes. "I'm not a baby. What about Peter? Have you warned him too?"
"Peter's been used to keeping secrets for the last 4 years," Lana said. "And he doesn't say much to the other children. I think Freddie knows more about him than all the children put together, so it would be good for him to have you as a friend."
"He's too young to be my friend," Priscilla said, pulling a face.
"Then pretend you're an older sister. He desperately needs someone to talk to nearer his own age, who knows about his father." She looked at the serious child.
"Remember how alone you felt when you first went to Bingham Hall?"
Priscilla's face clouded over. Had she said too much? Lana held her breath. Then Priscilla smiled.
I have a secret as well, don't I? The others think I'm an orphan like them, but you know my mummy and daddy are coming to fetch me. They might have to wait until the war's over, but they'll come for me one day.
Priscilla looked up at her with pleading eyes, as though willing her to agree. Lana's stomach turned. This poor child. She still believed she'd see her parents again. It was probably better not to argue with her at this precise moment, but she must talk to Maxine soon about having a special service in the chapel for Priscilla's parents, and have the Reverend speak to Priscilla in private beforehand.
"Where are you off to, all dolled up this morning?" Janice asked, as she stood by Lana's bedroom door and watched Lana put the finishing touches of lipstick on. Lana turned and laughed a little self-consciously. She might have known Janice would be curious as to why she was wearing makeup and her new summer frock. She'd spent some time wondering if it should be a skirt and blouse, but in the end had decided on the turquoise-flowered cotton dress with short puffed sleeves and a sweetheart neckline. She needed to look her very best with the extraordinary day she was facing. "It suits that lovely red hair of yours," her mother had said when Lana had shown her the dress. Today Lana just wanted to be herself rather than a teacher, simply giving two children some kind of normality in this topsy-turvy world. "Just going to see my parents," she said after a few seconds' pause. "Taking Priscilla. I thought it would do her good to have an outing. Let's hope she's ready." "Let's hope," Janice repeated, her eyes narrowing as if she didn't believe a word Lana was uttering. Lana wasn't going to mention taking Peter as well. That would definitely have aroused Janice's suspicions.
"Well, have a nice time with your parents," Janice said, and now her tone was slightly mocking.
"Thanks, I will.
Are you catching the bus?"
"No, Harold's over at Bingham Hall. He's going into town, so he's offered us a lift to the railway station."
Janice raised her eyebrows.
"You're getting very pally with them at the orphanage, aren't you?"
"I like it there," Lana said defensively, "and I like Maxine very much."
"She's okay, I suppose, the little I know her. Not sure about that Judith woman."
"I've not met her, so I can't say."
Lana could feel this conversation was going to go on if she didn't bring it to a halt. She picked up her handbag and gloves. It was such a beautiful morning that she decided not to wear a hat. It would be good to feel the sun and air on her face and in her hair. She tucked her cardigan in her soft, open bag. Lana practically had to brush past Janet, who backed away so she could shut the bedroom door behind her. Now, where was the child?
"Priscilla," she called as she stepped outside. "We'll leave him right now."
Maxine and Peter were waiting for Lana and Priscilla in the great hall, Maxine with a wide smile of welcome.
"Goodness, Lana, I don't believe I've ever seen you with your hair down. It looks positively pre-Raphaelite."
She turned her gaze to Priscilla.
"And you've left yours loose today as well. It suits you."
Priscilla made not the slightest acknowledgement.
"Well, Peter," Lana said, looking at the boy who was tapping his foot, his body looking tense with impatience. "Today's a special day for you. So, shall we go?"
"Yes, Miss Ashwin."
Peter pulled on his cap and said goodbye to Maxine as he bolted towards the front door. Harold dropped the three of them at Lime Street Station, where they had to wait half an hour for their train amongst crowds of soldiers saying goodbye to their sweethearts. Lana's eyes pricked with tears, and she focused on a poster demanding, "Is your journey really necessary?" Both children were quiet for almost the whole two-hour journey, buried in their books, although Peter looked up once and asked when they'd be there.
"It depends on how long we have to wait in Northampton," Lana told him. She hesitated.
"Peter," she began in almost a whisper, "you know we still have to be very careful to keep it a secret that you're meeting your father today, don't you? You must never tell anyone about the journey, or where we get off. Or about your father, because..."
"Yes, Miss Ashwin, I know," Peter interrupted. "I don't talk to the others about anything like that."
He glanced up at her. "I might whisper to Freddy about it when I get home, though," he said with a grin, his blue eyes shining with mischief.
It so completely transformed his usual serious expression that Lana wanted to laugh out loud with delight. It was the first time Peter had shown he had a lovely sense of humour. She caught Priscilla looking at him, a smile tugging at the corners of her mouth. Maybe the day would turn out better than she'd expected. All the stations had had their signs removed to confuse the Germans should there be an invasion, so Lana kept her ears pricked for the guard. When she thought they were never going to arrive, his sudden announcement made her jump.
Bletchley! Anyone for Bletchley?
Only one nervous-looking young woman with a suitcase stepped onto the platform, besides Lana and the two children. The young woman looked around her, and Lana saw a man approach and say something to her. The young woman nodded, and the man took her suitcase. They disappeared. Odd, Lana thought. The young woman didn't look as though she'd ever set eyes on the man, and yet they'd gone off together. She shrugged. She needed to look out for Carl Best, but he was nowhere to be seen. She looked up and down the platform. Maybe they hadn't allowed him to come after all. She felt a twinge of disappointment and told herself she was disappointed for Peter's sake. They walked the length of the platform and back, Peter's mouth drooping further as the minutes on the station clock ticked by. The three of them passed the ticket office for the third time. A fair-haired man appeared through the barrier. Lana's heart leapt, but it wasn't Carl Best. Then Peter suddenly gave a whoop of delight as he rushed off to throw himself into the arms of a tall blonde man who emerged behind the first one. The next moment, Carl was hugging his son just as he had at Bingham Hall.
Papa, I thought you wouldn't come.
I told you I would, Carl said. Only something very important would keep me away if I'd promised. His eyes met Lana's over the top of Peter's head, lingering for a few seconds before he gave her a small nod, then acknowledged Priscilla. I see you have brought a friend with you, Peter. That is nice. What is her name?
It's Prissy, and she's not a friend,
Peter immediately said, as he pulled away to look up at his father. She's come to keep Miss Ashwin company so I can have you to myself. How on earth had the child worked that one out? Lana thought. It happened to be the truth, but she certainly hadn't dreamed he would come out with such a statement, especially in front of Priscilla, who threw him a contemptuous gaze.
I'm Priscilla, she said to no one in particular, not Prissy.
But that's what everyone calls you, Peter argued. That's enough, Peter, Lana said sharply, then flushed with embarrassment. She was doing it again, telling off his son, interfering. She braced herself. Carl remained silent, watching her. And it's not true, she continued, not daring to look at Carl. I wanted to give Priscilla a treat as well. I think she deserves it after her bravery. What did she do? Carl demanded. How was it possible for eyes to be that blue? Later, she shot him a warning glance. He seemed to understand because he said, I think we should go or it will look as though I am up to no good. He looked at Lana. Is that how you say it?
Yes.
What a strange thing to say. She glanced over at the tall, fair-haired man who for an instant she'd mistaken for Carl Best. She'd felt him looking their way more than once. Carl followed her line of vision. That's who will be keeping his eye on me for the rest of the day, he said in a calm voice. She stared at him. You mean he'll be with us all day? She felt embarrassed again. To make sure you... she stammered. Yes. He lowered his head a little so their eyes were on the same level. To make sure I do not try to run away. He shrugged. Why would I do that? I'm here because I want to help. He touched her on the arm, and she felt the tension of him transfer to her. Come, let us walk into the town and have something to eat. You must all be hungry.
I'm hungry, Papa.
And you, Priscilla? His eyes fell on the child who was standing silently. She just shook her head and deliberately stepped to Lana's other side. Lana reached out her hand, but Priscilla appeared not to have noticed it. The four of them made their way out of the station, forming such an awkward group, Lana decided ruefully, that no one could possibly mistake them for a proper family. Lana realised Carl Best knew his way around the town as he headed straight for a cafe that was crowded, unusually with more women than men. She noticed several of the women, some in uniform, turn the moment Carl stepped through the door in his light-coloured trousers, white shirt and navy blazer, an appreciative smile on their lips, watching as he made his way to the counter. Peter clung to his father's hand as though he never wanted to let him go. Poor little chap. But at least they were together at this moment. Lana blamed the smoke for the sudden stinging of her eyes as she pushed her way through the tables looking for a vacant one.
Miss Ashwin, those people are just leaving.
Priscilla pointed to a table in a darkened corner where the woman was reaching for her handbag and the man was throwing some coins on the table.
Well spotted, Priscilla, Lana said. Carl Best had his back to her. She moved to touch him on the arm to alert him as to where they would be sitting.
A soft tingle ran through her when he turned and looked at her, his blue eyes delving deep, the same way he had when she'd seen him on the drive at Bingham Hall. He nodded, and moments later they were all squashed round a table only meant for two, a waiter kindly bringing two more chairs for Priscilla and Peter. Lana sat opposite Carl, so his son could sit next to him, but wished she hadn't, as it was difficult to stop glancing at him. He was unnervingly handsome, but she'd never seen him give a spontaneous smile. Was he always this serious? She turned to concentrate on Priscilla, glad she'd thought to bring the child, although by the look on Priscilla's face she didn't seem as though she was enjoying the unexpected outing that much, now they were actually here. Carl passed the menu to Lana, and she suddenly felt acutely embarrassed. He was a prisoner of war, so he wouldn't have any money on him. But if she paid for everyone, she might not have enough for any emergency on the journey back to Liverpool. She swallowed. It was no good. She had to come out with it. There's no need for worry, Miss Ashwin. You may choose what you desire on the menu, and also the children. I am able to pay for everyone. Lana looked at Carl, shocked to think he had known what she was thinking. She mustn't blush. She wasn't a schoolgirl, for heaven's sake. But she couldn't help the warmth stealing into her cheeks. If you're sure, I'm very sure. And then he looked across at her and smiled. It was the same smile she'd seen on Peter earlier that day, and it lit up his face. His eyes shone, and she couldn't help a tiny fizz of delight that he was human after all, as she gave him a grateful smile in return. But it wasn't only delight that caught her at that moment. Lana was thankful when their food came, and she didn't have to make conversation. It wasn't that Carl was so difficult or that Peter and Priscilla were acting as though the other didn't exist, but it was the awful feeling of being watched. And of course, that was exactly it. The man on the platform had joined an elderly gentleman who was sitting alone only a couple of tables away. No matter how she vowed to ignore him, she could see him out of the corner of her eye, pretending to be occupied with his meal. But she knew different. How must Carl feel having a pair of eyes on him constantly? She shivered inwardly. Peter was tackling his rabbit stew with enthusiasm, even though Maxine had mentioned what a difficult child he was to feed. How only yesterday he'd complained that the food in the home was goat's food, all those greens and mustard and cress. The boy was obviously bent on being on his best behaviour in front of his father, who looked far more relaxed now he was sitting with his son.
"Thank you for my dinner,"
Priscilla said politely to Carl as she put her knife and fork together. "It was a pleasure for me," Carl said, looking at her plate, barely touched. "Although I do not think you enjoyed it very much. Would you like something more?" Priscilla shook her head.
"Thank you, Papa, for my dinner."
Peter was not to be outdone on good manners. Lana watched as Carl gave his son that lovely smile again, and her heart squeezed. What must it be like to have a son or a daughter? The bond between the two of them was evident, and she caught a look of pure envy in Priscilla's eyes before the child looked away. This terrible war. Lana gave a start. It was the Germans who'd caused all the misery they were going through, and yet here she was, having a pleasant lunch with a German who used to be a Nazi. There was no getting away from it, no matter that he was now working for the British. She realised he looked different from every single man in the cafe, with his way of conducting himself in such an assured manner. His height, his blonde hair, and even his expression was so different from an Englishman's. He was younger than most of them, for a start, and as well-built as any serving officer. The women in the cafe had thought the same. Even the waitress had given him a second look. But was it because he was such a good-looking man, or had they suspected he was German? She tried to brush the thought away. As if he knew what she was thinking again, he said, "Do you want to ask me anything, Miss Ashwin? You know I cannot say any details, but it must be strange for you to sit with me, knowing so little of my situation." Peter had excused himself to go to the lavatory, and Priscilla was entertaining herself by watching the other diners. "I've never heard of Bletchley," Lana said. Then in a low tone she added, "Do you work in the town?" "Not far from here," he said, just as quietly. Lana was aware that the minder had his ear cocked, as though he might pounce at any moment and take Carl Best by the scruff of his neck and remove him from the cafe. She shook herself from thinking such an absurdity. "Are there other people like you working there?" she said tentatively, so as not to draw attention to the fact that he was a prisoner. "No, I am the only German, but there are people from other countries, as well as British." She suddenly had a thought. If the British got hold of any German papers, Carl would be useful in deciphering them. "Are you able to use your excellent command of English, translating for the British, perhaps?" Carl Best hesitated. "Something like that," he said finally. "This is where I cannot say more." "Of course," Lana said, "I understand. It's just that it's difficult for me." She broke off. "Difficult to see how I must fit in?" "Something like that," she said, and smiled. He smiled back. "Touché." He picked up the bill and left a florin on the table before making his way to the till. Chapter 20. For the next 2 hours, the four of them wandered round the small town, looking in shop windows that had very little on display. But at least there were no signs of any bombing by the Luftwaffe, Lana was thankful to note. She dreaded seeing Bletchley in case there was more destruction in the streets of houses and rows of shops. The Germans had destroyed so many of their cities, and here she was, trotting along by the side of one of them. Granted, he was no ordinary German, as she now knew, but nevertheless, he'd actually served in Hitler's army. The thought made her shiver, and Carl looked at her as he fell in step beside her, Peter gripping his hand and Priscilla lagging behind them. "You are not beginning a cold?"
"No, no, I was thinking." She wanted to tell him the truth. How nice it was to wander round a town that appeared untouched, but it was too embarrassing. She didn't know him well enough to make such comments, and it might well embarrass him too. If only they could have an honest discussion. But it would never be possible. She stopped and pointedly looked behind her, waiting for Priscilla to catch up.
"What were you thinking that made you so sad?" She looked up at him, conscious that Peter was listening.
"This awful war. I'm sick of it."
"Me too. My family is broken, all for the sake of some megalomaniac." She felt angry on his behalf, the agony of not knowing what had been happening to his wife and child. When the letters from his wife had suddenly stopped, he must have suspected the worst.
"Have you any family still, in Germany?" she asked.
"My parents are in Berlin, and I worry about them every day."
He paused and she saw his eyes moisten.
"I had a brother."
Had, that terrible word. "What happened?"
"He was a pilot." He looked at her directly. "He was shot down by one of your boys. Friedrich was only 19. My kid brother. He had his whole life in front of him." He screwed his eyes up as though to prevent the tears.
Unaware of what she was doing, she touched his arm. "I'm so sorry," she said, tears choking her throat.
It was the first time she'd ever really thought what misery there was on the other side as well. How Germans must feel losing members of their family, their cities destroyed. "But they started it," a voice whispered. She sighed. It was all so complicated. "Let us talk of more happy things," Carl said, and briefly touched her hand, which was still on his arm. She dropped her hand as though it had been scalded, and felt him immediately draw away.
"Miss Ashman, I'm thirsty," came a plaintive voice.
"We'll stop and have a cup of tea soon, Priscilla," Lana said, thankful for once that the child had interrupted. It seemed to Lana hardly any time at all before they were back on the platform at Bletchley, waiting for the return train. Lana stepped to the side while Peter flung himself into his father's arms, tears streaming down his cheeks. Carl said something to him in German and took out a handkerchief and wiped his tears away. "Come, Peter, you're nearly a man now," Carl said gently in English, glancing at Lana and shaking his head. She saw a tear steal down his own cheek, and for a crazy moment she wanted to brush it away.
"I don't want to leave," Peter said, sniffing as he took the handkerchief from his father's hand. "Why can't I stay with you? I'm not an orphan."
He gave Priscilla a sly glance.
"Like the others."
Lana saw Priscilla stiffen. "Priscilla." But Priscilla was already marching towards the other end of the platform, as though she couldn't bear to be with them. Lana hesitated. "It might be kinder to let her be for a few moments." Carl's voice came from behind. How close he was. Close enough to smell the clean maleness of him. She stepped back in confusion, almost forgetting what she wanted to say. Gathering her wits, she turned to face him. "The terrible thing is, she won't admit she's lost both parents. They were killed in the blackout, and she was brought to Dr. Bernardo's a few months ago. She has nightmares, and since the fire she's been sleeping in my room at the cottage by the school." "It is too much for a young girl to bear," Carl said. He bent to give Peter a kiss. "Go and find Priscilla, and when the train comes you can save Miss Ashwin a seat. And be kind to Priscilla. She is very sad at the moment." Peter nodded, his face tear-stained. Carl cocked his head. "I think I hear the train coming." Peter turned an anxious face towards Lana, then back to his father. "Off you go, son. Miss Ashwin will follow in 2 minutes." Peter shot off, his thin legs flying along the platform. All of a sudden, Lana felt shy. It was the first time she'd found herself alone with him, and she couldn't think what to say. "Miss Ashwin? Lana?" Carl's tone was grave. "May I please call you Lana?" He looked at her with his deep-set eyes, and it was as though something had shifted between them. She said the first thing that sprang to her mind, "Only if I'm allowed to call you Carl." His face broke into a warm smile, showing his creamy white teeth. "I would like that very much." He suddenly became serious again. "And may I write to you?" The train puffed its way into the station, the steam enclosing them as though there was no one else in the world. Lana swallowed. "If you would like to." "I would also like that very much." He hesitated and ran his hand over his short blonde hair. "And will you write back to me?" A quiver ran across Lana's shoulders. He was standing there, waiting for her to reply. Out of the corner of her eye, she saw the man who was watching them take a few steps in their direction. "If you would like me to, I would like it more than very much." And then he laughed, breaking the mood in an instant. "You must go, or you will miss the train." It was only when she was in the carriage, wrapped in her jumble of thoughts of all that had happened, did she realise she had told a German she would write to him. But by doing so, was she betraying Dickie? Both children were silent on the journey home. Lana knew Peter would be thinking of his father and wishing he could have stayed longer with him, but she had no idea what was going through Priscilla's head. She was reading a book, so Lana tried to engage Peter in looking at the scenery, but for the most part it was gloomy. Neither child gave any response, and in the end Lana gave up. She leaned her head back on the cloth headrest, thankful Maxine had given her enough money for them all to go second class. Her eyes began to droop with the rhythm of the train's wheels over the rails. It was nearly midnight when they arrived back in Liverpool. It had been another gruelling journey, stopping once for nearly an hour, and this time they had to change twice, each with another long wait. Peter was fractious, and Priscilla threw him a contemptuous look. It had started to drizzle, and Lana's cardigan was becoming soggy, clinging to her summer dress. She worried that the children would get colds if they stayed in damp clothes waiting for the bus. As they stepped out of the railway station, Lana's eye went to the taxi rank. Would she have enough cash to take a taxi all the way to Bingham? She could tell both children were exhausted, and it would be wonderful to sit in the back of a comfortable cab. Gripping Peter's reluctant hand, she stepped over to the front taxi, and the driver rolled down his window. "Where you going, love?" he asked. "Could you please tell me your charge to go to Bingham Hall? It's the orphanage." "I know it." He furrowed his brow. "I could make it a straight pound." It was too expensive. She thanked him and backed away. "Tell you what, love, I'll do it for 10 bob, seeing as you've got the nippers." Before she could reply, he'd sprung out of his cab and opened the rear door. Oh, the relief to be whisked to Bingham after all the changes and delays they'd gone through that day. "I can't thank you enough," she said when they arrived at the orphanage. She handed him a 10-shilling note and an extra coin. "That's all right, love." He pressed the shilling back in her hand. "You just get in the warm and get those kiddies dried off." His tyres crunched on the gravel as he drove away. She pulled the bell cord and one of the maids, she couldn't remember her name, ushered her in. "I would like to go with you, Miss Ashwin," Peter said, looking at her with his father's blue eyes. "I'm sorry, Peter, but there's no spare bedroom where I live."
"Priscilla stays there," Peter said sulkily.
Nana felt Priscilla at her side stiffen.
"It's only until the decorators have finished the girls' dormitory," she said, "which will be soon."
She was relieved to see Athena come down the staircase.
"Sorry Maxine wasn't here to let you in," she said, "but she was needed in the sick ward and asked me if I'd look after Peter." "I don't need anyone looking after me," Peter said firmly. "No, but you're probably hungry," Athena said, smiling. "Bertie's left some supper for you all." "I don't want anything," Peter said.
Athena caught Lana's eye, then turned to Peter.
"Cook will be upset if you don't eat. She's made you a nice spam sandwich." "I hate spam, and I can get ready for bed on my own."
Before Lana could speak, Athena shook her head as Peter ignored her and trudged up the stairs without looking back.
"He's tired out," she said. "But you and Priscilla, come and get yours."
"Would it be too rude if we take it with us?" Lana said. "Priscilla's tired, we all are, and we could have it back at the cottage."
"I'll pack it up for you."
Athena returned in 5 minutes, with the sandwiches packed in greaseproof paper.
"Would you let Maxine know I'll telephone her tomorrow?"
"Yes, of course. I'm going home in the morning for a few days, so I'll leave her a note." Priscilla padded along by her side without speaking. Every so often Lana glanced at her, but the rigid profile told her nothing. Twice she tried to say something, but Priscilla refused to respond. As soon as they reached the cottage,